In a later chapter, you expand on the long-term social and psychological impact of early trauma and the development of the default mode network that you were just talking about. So, yeah, what is the connection there?
Well, I think what one of the things that that certainly has been true. So I remember when the when I was a student in an internship. When these boxes arrived from the American Psychiatric Association, came in, we opened them up, and we each got this present, which was the DSM-3. And it was the first time that we had PTSD as a diagnosis, that we had to, because DSM-2 was like this little pamphlet that had things like homosexuality and and venereal diseases, So we didn't have much sort of diagnostic guidance before then. But I remember having post-traumatic stress, this as something that we can now diagnose and think about. And the three categories which have stayed pretty consistent even to today are intrusion, avoidance, and arousal. And it's mostly based around arousal. The idea is that people are hyperactivated because of the traumatic experience. And the other symptoms, in a sense, like intrusion is an aspect of that. And withdrawal is the sort of reaction to it or attempt to cope with it. So we've had this very kind of simplistic amygdala-based model of trauma since we first got it as a diagnosis in 1980, at least in our generation. And I think when you look at these executive systems and think back of what we're dealing with in healing, trying to heal trauma, is that if you accept that the brain is a social organ, and if you accept something anywhere like what I'm hypothesizing as these different executive networks, then the inhibition of the default mode network and even the parietal frontal network by the primitive amygdala system, what that does is it really disconnects trauma victims from the group mind. So it keeps them from being able to love and work adequately, in Freud's term. And it also, it cuts them off from all of the salubrious effects of being able to be in relationships, affect regulation, developing narratives, co-constructing narratives with other people that help to regulate affect and all of that. So what can happen is, both in early trauma and in severe trauma later in life, is that people become essentially isolated. And as Nietzsche said, you can find everything in isolation except sanity. And I think that one of the things that we're seeing the suicide rates. I think it's American vets. There's more than one suicide a day.
Wow.
From Gulf War era and Afghanistan era vets. And I mean, what suicide is, it's an expression of no longer being needed by the tribe or no longer being connected to the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like with neurons, there's this process called apoptosis. So they die when they're no longer connected in networks, and humans start to go into self-destruct mode when they no longer are connected with the group or the tribe.
Yeah.
And so what I'm hoping is that people start to expand their idea of post-traumatic stress as lots of physiological dysregulation, but the most devastating part of it and what keeps people from healing is not being connected with others.